This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
This is the Fixer Sciatica Podcast.
Today I'm going to talk about the differential diagnosis for sciatica and why this subject. The reason being is the fact that sciatica pain in itself has multiple causes, but can also present as other conditions. And if we are unable to accurately diagnose sciatica, the cause of sciatica, or the cause of the pain that you're feeling, then as a result, what ends up happening is that you're going to go through a lot of unnecessary misery just from sheer waiting, unnecessary misery due to doing the improper exercises or stretches. And then in some cases, if you do end up getting a surgery and there's no relief, you end up getting the wrong surgery for the wrong problem, which is why differential diagnosis is so important. The term differential diagnosis is actually the definition is actually the act of determining what is the problem that you're experiencing and why is that problem happening. And again, the reason why I think it's so important is because the treatment is going to be driven by the cause of what you're experiencing. And so if you're listening to this episode, this is not your first bout with sciatica, or you've been dealing with sciatica for a long period of time, and you're probably trying to figure out what is the best way for you to solve it. And so today's episode is going to allow us to shed some light and identify what are some of these causes, how can we fix it, and how can we get you one step closer to pain relief. For starters, we need to identify what sciatica is. And I've said this in previous episodes, that sciatica is just identifying that the sciatic nerve is irritated. And what is the sciatic nerve? The sciatic nerve is one of the longest nerves in the body. And it starts from our low back and travels all the way down our leg. But nerves don't operate in just isolation. And what that means is the origination of the sciatic nerve actually starts up at your brain, then it travels down your spinal cord, and then it actually exits your spine via the foramen, aka the openings, at the L4, L5, S1, S2, and S3 nerve roots. That means that these nerves exit at those spinal levels, which helps us identify, okay, what parts of that area actually get engaged. What's really interesting is if we look at what we call the dermatomes and the myotomes, which is going to be the areas of the body that are going to be served specifically by these spinal roots, not the sciatic nerve itself, but just the spinal roots. L2 and L3 actually serve the upper and anterior thigh. Once we transition to the lower lumbar, L4, L5, S1, S2, and S3, it actually will address our hamstrings, calves, shins, feet, and buttocks as well. And so this is definitely something to consider, because if you are having anterior thigh pain, as in the front of your thigh, you might not necessarily be dealing with what we call sciatica pain, but you are probably dealing with an irritation of the nerve roots of L2 and L3, which can often be managed very, very similarly to the issues causing sciatica. And the good news is the fact that you don't have to stop listening here and you don't have to stop searching, because again, management of anterior thigh pain, any of the lower quarter, any pain that happens below your belly button can be managed well with the same approach as we approach sciatica pain. So as I said before, the sciatic nerve is one of the longest nerves in the body, and it leaves the spine. It actually crosses the glute, travels down our thigh, past our knee, and then down into our foot. And what that means is that we have many areas in which this nerve can get irritated. And to address all of these areas all at once can actually be quite overwhelming and make things very, very challenging. which is why it's important when you're trying to actually identify the cause and the solution of this pain that we address it in a step-by-step process. And the reason being is the fact that it's very, very easy to get overwhelmed. As you can tell, we have over 100 episodes talking only about sciatica pain. And if you go on Google, you're going to search, there's over 14 million articles talking about the best stretches, best exercises, best things to do for sciatica pain, going from exercise and stretches to lifestyle to sleep and supplements. There's a lot of information that is out there. And the key is we don't know what's going to work until we actually try it, which is why it's so important for you to listen to your symptoms and how they respond to each individual stretch, which would allow you to identify how can you improve and how can you recover. But let's break this down a little bit more to give you a good, clear idea in regards to some interventions that you can actually do yourself, which then can guide you either when you're working with a physical therapist or working with a chiropractor, working with anyone, so then that way they can guide your treatment. I will say from the get-go, if you ever tell a clinician or a provider about the pain that you're feeling, and the first thing that they do is give you strengthening exercises without actually testing your strength, it's time for you to actually find a new provider. People will say your muscles are weak, this is why you're having pain. But the truth is that muscles do not just get weak for no reason. They often get weak because they're either in an overstretched position, they get too weak because they're in an overtight position. The other option is that they're weak because they are overworked. And if a muscle is currently overworked, it does not make sense for you to try to strengthen and work that muscle out more to get it stronger if in fact the main issue is the fact that that muscle was overworked in the first place. So that is something that we have to ask ourselves is, why are we getting this exercise and how will it affect me? The ultimate test is once you do the exercise, do you feel better as a result? So going into the breakdown in the areas of the sciatic nerve and how it gets irritated, we're going to start off with actually looking at the spine. The spine is one of the most common areas leading to irritation of the sciatic nerve. And oftentimes, there's going to be three major reasons why the sciatic nerve will actually get irritated. Three major reasons as to three anatomical structures that could be influencing this pain. The first area that is often the culprit, or often identified as the culprit, will be your discs, your lumbar discs specifically. They sit in between your vertebrae and they're used as shock absorbers, and they're also used as fulcrums who allow the spine to move more efficiently. Over time, as we age or as we move excessively at our spines, what can end up happening is that these discs, which are jelly donuts, the donut part of the jelly donut will actually start to get a little bit weaker. And as it starts to get weaker, the contents of the disc, which is usually the jelly, will push out. And as that pushes out, it can actually put pressure on the surrounding nerves, specifically at the nerve roots of L4, L5, S1, S2, and S3. What that means oftentimes is that in order for us to heal from, say, a herniated disc, we need to provide two major things. One, we need to create a little bit of a distraction force. You often hear this in medical terms, we call it lumbar traction. And lumbar traction is pretty much, in essence, unweighting your spine, letting gravity do its job, and the separation or the elongation of your spine. It is theorized that when you apply lumbar traction, that there is what we call a negative pressure buildup inside the disc itself. And what that truly means is that if you elongate the spine, the pressure inside the disc should be pulling the contents of that disc back in towards the middle, which is why in some cases you might feel a little bit better laying down versus standing up or being more upright, because you're unweighted and there is a little bit of a distractive force that does occur when you are in fact laying down.
This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery, and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit ptpatientadvocate.com and book your free call with our experts.
The other option to treating a disc is actually trying to push the contents of that disc back in towards the middle of the spine. And often if you look via an MRI, usually if the disc is the cause of your pain, you're going to see a herniation or a bulge in the direction of your pain. So if you're experiencing pain on the right side, if the disc that you're seeing via MRI is actually bulging out to the right, yes, that could be the cause of your pain. And so the idea is that we want to push the contents of that disc back in towards the middle. And the way that we do that is by focusing on what we call moving in the position and moving in the path of least resistance. So if your disc bulge is pushing out to the right, what that means is that if you lean to the right, the idea is that that motion should be pushing the contents of that disc back in towards the middle. Same thing if your disc bulge is pushing straight back, doing something as simple as a simple back extension, or what you'll often hear is a McKenzie press up, is theorized to actually push the contents of that disc back in towards the middle, hence a reduction in pain. The reason why I say theorized versus actually truly happening is because they've done radiological studies on the effects of these prone press ups and these extensions. And although in some cases it does push the contents of the disc back into the middle, it doesn't do it all the time. So that's why it's really more so in theory rather than actual practice. How do we diagnose that the pain is actually being caused by the herniated disc? You can get it diagnosed via an MRI. You can actually clear your spine via MRI to ensure that you don't have cancers, fractures, or tumors, but it also helps us identify the degree of a disc herniation that occurs. Now, what's really interesting is the fact that MRIs, x-rays, all those, they're all really great at ensuring that there's no medical red flags, but when it comes to the actual diagnostic accuracy of determining your pain, the evidence is not very high, which means that the ability to determine the cause of your pain via an MRI is going to be changing between practitioner to practitioner. And what that means is that it's important for us as movement professionals or as other clinicians is to identify, all right, well, we have the MRI, but what are our clinical findings? And this is where things start to become very important. So clinical findings, especially if you're dealing with something like a disc irritation, a herniation, or a bulge, is the fact that you feel a lot better being more upright, so say standing or walking, or laying down, and you feel a little worse when you are sitting or rounding forward or doing activities like flexion. Another area that people often overlook in clinical diagnosing for disc herniations is actually going to be leaning towards or away from the side of pain. If your herniation is the cause of the pain that you're dealing with, leaning towards the side of the pain is going to theoretically help improve your symptoms because, again, if you lean towards the side of pain, you lean towards the herniation, it is thought to actually press the contents of the jelly donut back in towards the middle. So those are the components of the disc itself. Now, in some cases, the disc can actually herniate anteriorly, but when it herniates anteriorly, there's no spinal nerves to actually irritate. In some cases, when it bulges anteriorly, another reason why bulges may be problematic is that it may change the mechanics of the spine itself, which then actually leads us on over into the second part, where if we're looking at altered spinal mechanics or how your back is moved, another area that can actually be impacted or impacting your sciatic nerve irritation, especially at the spinal level, is actually going to be the foramen or the openings of where the nerves exit your spine and enter your body. So I want you to envision two vertebrae. stacked right on top of each other, but then those vertebrae are kind of surrounded by a cage. Those nerves actually need to exit the spine via an opening, and that's what we call the foramen. Foramen is Latin, or the medical term for opening. Over time, as we age, what's really, really interesting, when it comes to bones, if you rub two bones together, unlike two pieces of wood or two pieces of metal, where you rub two pieces of wood or metal together, you're going to end up wearing away at those surfaces. What's really interesting about bone is you combine movement and pressure, you're actually going to be growing more bone. So the concept of wear and tear is actually a misnomer, because when you don't necessarily wear your bones down, you actually rub your bone together, develop more bone, and that's what we're talking about in regards to arthritis. And so over time, with excessive motion at the spine, excessive motion, really mostly at the spine and a lot of shear force, what's going to end up happening is that these holes of where the nerves exit the spine can actually get a little bit more narrow. And when that happens, it increases the opportunity for that nerve to get pinched, in essence. And again, this can be diagnosed via MRIs. We can determine the degree of stenosis or narrowing, but really it's based on our clinical findings. So what are the clinical findings when it comes to identifying the sciatic nerve? Now, the clinical findings will be pain with something like extension, pain when it comes to leaning towards the side of pain. So it's going to be the exact opposite of what it feels like for patients who are dealing with disc issues. And again, even though you see something via an MRI, it doesn't mean that that's the cause of the pain. And we still need to go through a clinical exam to, again, reach the differential diagnosis. So those are the two main areas of in the spine that could actually irritate the nerves themselves. And oftentimes when you're dealing with more of a central location, you're really addressing more so the nerve roots, which is when the moment that the nerves exit the spine, rather than anywhere further down the chain, which is why, again, it's so important for us to actually address one component at a time before we move from body part to body part. Another third area of the spine that can get overlooked are the facet joints. And so bones, they don't just kind of slide on top of each other.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
I want you to imagine, if you're looking at a roof, shingles. The way the shingles are oriented, they're kind of stacked on top of each other, and that's how facets work. And facets allow the joints to stay stable, but also have a little bit of movement. And just like with the stenosis of the foramen, you can develop arthritis in those facets and it can pinch on some of those nerves. What's really interesting about facet joint pain is the fact that we're going to experience a lot more pain when we compress that facet joint. So if we're having right-sided pain, if you lean to the right, you're going to be compressing on the right side. And if that produces the type of pain that you're experiencing, then you may or may not be dealing with a facet. A way for us to actually improve that is actually by trying to open up that facet through side bending away from the pain, as well as forward bending. Very, very similar to the issues that you're dealing with when you're experiencing more of the spinal stenosis. And so what that also means is the following. We have to determine, are we dealing with what we call a peripheral nerve issue, which is actually irritation of the sciatic nerve, or are we dealing with more a central nerve issue? This is how you're going to help determine whether or not your issues are going to be spine related versus is it going on your hip or your knees. If you have bilateral symptoms, if you have sciatica pain in both sides, most of the time it's not going to be related to tight hips and tight piriformises, although that's going to be another thing that we're going to talk about very shortly. But if you have bilateral symptoms, more often than not, you're going to have a central irritation, whether it be a central disc bulge or bilateral stenosis of the spine. And it is very important that you actually address and see how do your symptoms behave when you're doing the back motions of forward bending, backward bending, side bending, or rotation. Regardless of the diagnosis, What's important is that when you are in an active state of pain, every action that you do should be focusing on improving your pain and making you feel better. And so if you're trying to do strengthening exercises to get you stronger, but your pain has not changed at all, it is time to focus on a different aspect. What positions, movements, or stretches actually reduce your pain and make you feel better? So from a spine standpoint, we have our foramen, we have our discs, and our facets. Now we have a bunch of other structures as well, but those are the main aspects. And also, the nerves, the sciatic nerve is not the only nerve that gets formed from these nerve roots, L4, L5, S1, S2, and S3. You also have nerves that are actually formed by L2 and L3 nerve roots. You have your anterior thigh muscles. You have the nerves that actually supply your glutes. You have the nerves that actually supply the anterior part of your thigh. So these are actually going to be different nerves as well. But as I said before, if it's going to be a spinal issue, the good news is that if it is a spinal issue, trying to manage the nerve roots at these levels will be the same. Again, it's going to be based on spinal motions. The next thing that we need to look at is actually, okay, let's move further down the chain. Okay, if we cleared the back, and this is how you can actually clear the back to ensure that the pain that you're dealing with is actually not caused by your back, and is actually by having you go directly into each of these spinal motions at end range, meaning that you're going to bend forward and touch your toes. If your hamstrings are really tight, you can bend your knees, give your hamstrings a little bit of slack. Do a backwards bend, hands on your butt, lean back like you're doing the limbo, give yourself some extra pressure. If that doesn't change or produce your symptoms, then back extension is probably not going to affect you. Side bend to the right, to the left, ensure that they're both symmetrical, ensure that you're actually able to push really deep, and ensure that that actually does not impact the pain that you're dealing with, then that way you know that your back is cleared for side bending. And the same thing when it comes to rotation, look over your right shoulder, look over your left shoulder, turn as far as you can. If that does not impact your symptoms, then it's time for us to actually move down to your hips. And primarily when it comes to hip issues, this is how you can actually determine, are you dealing with a true hip pathology or not? Usually with hip arthritis or a tear in your labrum or any sort of other hip issue, you're looking at actually more so pain deep down in your groin. And if you don't feel pain deep down in your groin, you feel pain more so on your buttock or your lateral thigh, then it's most likely not your hip joint itself. So you can rest assured and you can be less worried about your hips for now. And so we look at the anatomy of your hips, specifically your buttocks. And what's really cool is the fact that the buttocks, probably one of the thickest muscles in the body, and you have a lot of different layers. You have your glute maximus, you have your glute medius, you have your glute minimus, but then you have your obturators and your piriformis and your gemelli. So as you get deeper into the layers, the muscles get a little bit smaller, but one of the most common areas that people look at would be your piriformis. And so how does the piriformis play into effect? How can you tell, are you dealing with more of a piriformis syndrome versus actual irritation or sciatic nerve? So if you are dealing with buttock pain that does not get influenced by back changes, back position, you're most likely dealing with a little bit more localization at your butt. Probably either because your piriformis is either in a shortened position. You'll know that your piriformis is in a shortened position because you can't cross your right one leg over the other. Or your piriformis is in a lengthened position. And that is something along the lines of lengthened and weak. And so if you're squatting and if you notice that your knees are caving in, that actually helps identify, okay, you're probably dealing with a little bit of glute or piriformis weakness, and we have to identify or address that motion itself. So again, piriformis syndrome, if your butt pain and your leg pain is not influenced by spinal motion, we can move further down the line and think, okay, it's probably our glutes. So from there, we can do some stretching of the piriformis. You can do something like a pigeon. I think pigeon's a little too aggressive. You can do something more like a gentle figure four stretch. You can roll it out. But really what's important is for us to actually determine, why is the piriformis tight in the first place? Again, is it tight in a shortened position or is it tight in a lengthened position? Because if it's tight in a shortened position, we can stretch it. But strengthening is actually going to make it more irritated. And then on the other hand, if it's a lengthened muscle, if we stretch it, it's going to make it a little bit more irritated because it's going to make it more tight. Or if we... But if we strengthen it, we can now actually allow that piriformis to restore its normal function. But then we have to figure out, okay, well, here's the issue, but why does the piriformis get so irritated in the first place? muscles, nerves, they don't get irritated for no reason. It's often because, unfortunately, the activities that we do on a daily basis. So we have to reevaluate and look at how we do things. How do we walk? How do we bend over? How do we pick things up? It's important for us to not only do exercises, but to also change the way we do things. Because oftentimes, what we experience, the pain that we experience outside of trauma, is often due to the accumulation of stresses over time. And what that means is the fact that we need to make changes in variety to our movements to ensure that we do not overstress our muscles or our joints or our nerves in a shortened period of time. I will tell you, it took me about 8 years to finally determine that we can move quickly from the back down to the hips in a faster way as long as you can clear the spine. And so from there, another area that can be looked at is our sacroiliac joint. The sacroiliac joint is a space pretty much right above our buttocks. And it's actually where our sacrum, which is our fused vertebrae, that actually get combined with the ilium, which is our pelvis bone. And in some cases, either due to trauma, say us falling off a step, or just from a behavior standpoint, these joints can get out of alignment. And what's really interesting is that these joints themselves, unlike any other joints, the sacroiliac joint is kind of like a Lego piece. And the thing is the fact that over time they can get out of alignment and it can cause dysfunction. So it is important for us to be able to see how can we determine that. Again, it's not going to be the first thing I'm going to be looking at. I need to start off at the spine first before we move on to anywhere else. So the way we can actually determine the sacroiliac joint and its function is actually by testing it out. We have provocative tests, which actually puts torsional press, compressive force, or distraction force on the sacroiliac joint. And if we're doing any of those and we either see increased movement, the production of the pain, or the resolution of your pain, that does in fact tell us that you're dealing with some issues in your sacroiliac joint. And that sacroiliac joint can actually be caused by weakness, overuse, and how we go about doing our activities. Then we have to move down to the thigh because the sciatic nerve does run down our hamstrings. And if you have really tight hamstrings, it can irritate the sciatic nerve. And tight hamstrings can, in fact, irritate the sciatic nerve. So yes, you could do a simple stretch. But when you're doing a simple hamstring stretch, what's really interesting is that you are not just simply stretching out your hamstrings. You're stretching out the sciatic nerve as well. So what that means is if you are having tight hamstrings and if you're releasing your hamstrings results in improvement of your pain, we have to ask ourselves, why are our hamstrings tight in the first place? As you can tell, as we're presenting all this information, the big question is, well, why is this happening? And it's going to be really based off of, one, our behaviors, our movements, and our day-to-day activities. And so you can do all the stretches and exercises as you'd like, but unless you change how you do things, we're only going to be reaching about 50 to 75% improvement. So, hamstrings, why are they tight? It could be the fact that you're sitting for a long period of time or you don't stretch. I'm actually going to be talking about in a future episode why you don't necessarily need to stretch. And that could also just be that you're not used to using your hamstrings. We live in a society where using the hamstrings and bowing and hinging at the hip is actually very scary because it's often thought that if we hinge and let our torsos bow forward, that we're actually going to be putting a lot of pressure on our spine. But the good news is that I will assure you that if you use your hamstrings aggressively or properly, your back and your sciatic pain will feel so much better. And then we move down a little bit lower into the calf and foot area. Why can that be such an issue? And what's really interesting is the fact that our foot and our calves, they connect us to the world. They connect us to the ground that we walk on. We get information from the floor, and that actually helps us change our standing position. And what's really interesting is that there are a couple pressure points which are actually going to be relieving some of the sciatic pain. And you've probably seen it. It's a couple things developed by chiropractors, which is really more of a leg brace. It puts an acupressure point, which is kind of in line with the superficial fibular nerve. And what ends up happening is it creates kind of long-standing relief. So you can actually influence the chain of pain by going down the chain of pain. So in some cases, if you press on your calf, your back pain can improve. The exact mechanisms as to why that happens is not very clear, but it can happen. But what's really interesting is that we do have to look at the foot and how that actually influences how we stand and how we walk. Now, recently, I've come across a lot of people who've been dealing with a lot of flat foot issues or pronated feet, or people who are standing and walking with their feet turned out, or the development of bunions. And this is going to be an entirely different episode on its own. But the great thing is the fact that treating your flat feet does not have to be complicated. You don't have to do 300 different foot exercises to actually, or 300 foot exercises, or spend thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollars on customized orthotics. Because if you look at your foot, a collapsed foot or a flat foot is going to be the rolling in onto the inner edges of your arches. It's going to result in the development of calluses and bunions on the inner edges of your feet. But what's really interesting is when that happens, look up the chain, your knees will buckle and your pelvis will actually rotate forward a little bit. And that can create a lot of tension in your glutes. It can also create a lot of tension in your hip flexors. And so what ends up happening is the fact that when you have this feedback loop, your glutes, your knees, your back, your feet, we need to be able to ensure that we're addressing each aspect of the system. But as I said before, we need to be able to address each system one component at a time, because if we address them all at once, it becomes challenging. But again, it's really focusing on determining why you're dealing with this pain in the first place, and then addressing the action steps afterwards. And the best way for you to identify, well, what are the conditions that I could also be feeling? Why am I experiencing this leg pain? We have our sciatica. We have a nerve root compression, which is possibly going to be a radiculopathy. We have the peripheral nerve injury, which is going to be more so a localized irritation of the sciatic nerve, which can be found in piriformis syndrome. We can also look at another diagnosis that we talked about in this episode is the facet joint dysfunction or sacroiliac joint dysfunction. And then we can look all the way up and down. And the great news is the fact that even if you're experiencing leg pain that hasn't resolved for a long period of time, what's nice is the fact that every lower quarter should be assessed at the spine first to ensure that the spine is not overlooked. And I hope this episode was a little bit more insightful, allows you to take a look at, say, all right, well, what's my current treatment program? Is my current treatment program focusing and actually addressing one system at a time? Or am I kind of going through all of the things at once and I'm not really quite sure what helps and what doesn't? This actually gives you permission to go back into your self-care routine and see, are these exercises serving me? And the great news is the fact that you do not have to do this alone. We've developed the Patient Advocate Program as an affordable and convenient way to actually manage your pain. And the really great way, a really great thing about this is the fact that it's extremely convenient, extremely affordable. It's only at $25 a week where you actually get a chance to interact with me, and we can actually go through your program and see what is helping and what isn't, and add those things that will actually allow you to get better so you can go back into doing the things that you love. All you need to do is check it out at ptpatientadvocate.com. Link will be found in the show notes. And as a reminder for this episode, in order for you to treat your pain effectively, you have to determine why this is happening in the first place. And oftentimes this can be accumulation of stresses. So we need to look at how you go about doing things even more as to what you're doing to recover.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day. No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.